Let's read Luke 16, verses 19 through 31. It's not that long. And it's quite an interesting parable, if it is in fact a parable. I have my doubts about it. I think it's real. It was not a parable. We'll talk about the difference in a minute, which is not much. But anyway, let's just read that. Luke 16, 19 through 31. And there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. Notice quite the contrast there. Talk about it a little bit. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received the good things, and likewise Lazarus, evil things. But now he is comforted and you're tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there's a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham. He just can't get over the fact he's no longer in charge. But he said, no, Father Abraham. But if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, if they will not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded though one rise from the dead. This section, starting back really, about chapter 12, chapter 13, somewhere in there, Jesus starts talking in parables. Now, I think it's more than this, but so our minds can get around it a little bit, it's very simple. It's deeper than this, but in a nutshell, I've heard it said that a parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning, and that's probably pretty good. We'll go with that. But one of the things about parables, because some people say, well, this can't be talking about a real place where we go when we die to the realm of Hades, because it's just a parable. Well, okay, first of all, if it's a parable, it's the only one that Jesus ever gave where he named a man's name. No other parables like that, if this is a parable. When he called him Lazarus. It's kind of eerie that in the next chapter or two he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. I'm not saying it's the same Lazarus, but I'm saying it could be. We don't know that. But also, if you agree that it is a parable, and I'm okay with that, that a parable never, and you can underline that word, highlight it, bold, italics, make it a size 20 font, whatever you want to do. A parable never contradicts the natural order of things. When Jesus, in all of his parables, he never gives some far-out science fiction kind of example that's not true. Every single parable, there are no exceptions. You can go from time Jesus started to time he ends. There's no exceptions to this. He never violates the natural order of things. He never violates nature. They're all true. So even if it's a parable where he's trying to get us to understand heavenly meanings on earthly things that people can understand, those things never violate the natural order of things. Very important. I lean toward that it's not a parable myself. But if it is a parable, you got to keep that caveat in mind that in all of his parables, he always takes things that people understand that are real, that they see every day, and he makes application to a spiritual lesson. So that's real important to know when we're talking about parables. Now there was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared luxuriously every day. This purple, it's not like we go to the store and you get some purple dye, and it's $1.29 and you dye stuff. Not that. This came off the coast of Tyre. Remember Tyre, Sidon, the Phoenicians, seafaring people right along that Mediterranean Sea. You've got Israel and you've got Lebanon and all of that area. Only place. There was this little shellfish, Murex purpurpurpulus, or some name like that. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. And each of those little shellfish yielded one drop of dye. One drop. One shellfish, one drop. Now, if this king, or this not king, but this man who had so much money that was scary, that was dressed in purple, you can imagine how long and how many little shellfish had to give their lives to dye that purple robe he had on. Kings wore this. So it was quite the deal. And he said he fared with purple and fine linen. The linen came from Egypt. And it was, the linen was said to be snow white in nature. And it was so rare and so expensive that he said that, while I was reading, was that it's worth twice the weight, its weight in gold. So this is a man, and he lived, he banqueted all every day. Like, I made some homemade soup today. He didn't eat soup. He fared sumptuously every day. He had a big banquet. No doubt, probably fat, like me. And so this guy had it going on, and he had lots of dinero. Now, notice, we're going to see where he's going to go at the end, but he wasn't a criminal. At least doesn't say that. He wasn't a murderer. He wasn't a thief. He could have probably got his money honestly. In some sort of, as a businessman. I don't know. Doesn't say that. So that wasn't what the kicker was. He was a rich man in purple and fine linen, and he had banquets every day. You think, well, that's a pretty good life. Well, okay. We'll check on that. Now, here's a contrast. This whole thing is a contrast. This whole parable, contrast. Before they die, after they die. Where they go, and all of that. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus. He was full of sores, who was laid at his gate. Now, why do you think he was laid at the gate? He was just hoping to get something to eat. And notice he didn't say he was desiring. Let me go ahead and read that one. Desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table, moreover the dogs came and licked his sores. He wasn't there begging for steak. He was just hoping to get some crumbs. Now, when crumbs fall off of a table, a rich man's table, or whatever, and you got a little puppy dog in your house, what's going to happen to those crumbs? You don't have to worry about cleaning them up, because they're going to get scooped up. Was that something you said, oh, I wish I'd have had those crumbs back, because I was going to make a cobbler with those? No, crumbs are nothing. Crumbs are nothing. So it wasn't like he's saying, please give me a bite of steak, and this rich man ignored him. I'm not even giving you the crumbs. In fact, I don't even get away from me, kind of a thing. So that's his problem. He said all he desired is this beggar. Sometimes we have them. We had one last night here who's been here for three or four Sunday nights in a row. Didn't smell good. Had all of his stuff stolen. He got tracks. He was reading the tracks. He sets, we have to, we can ignore him. We can ignore him. It didn't work out too well for the guy to ignore this guy. So, you know, Book of James, real clear about that. I might want to befriend him or help him out a little bit or do what we can, because we don't know. In the book of Hebrews, it says, you have entertained angels unawares. What does that mean? I have no idea. I don't know what that means. But I think it just means what it says. I don't know. I don't know about that guy. But we've got to do what we can do, right? Maybe it's not much, but we can do what we do. That was this guy. So I'm not giving you anything, man. Now, here's where he got his medical help. His friends were the dogs. You ever had a cut? Or as kids, we had always had dogs around, and your knees were always skinned up. It's like I got out of bed to see, how quickly can I fall today and cut up both my knees? Oh, I felt good when my dog licked my knees. I don't know what it did for him, but anyway, it helped my knees. So that's what was going on here. And he had sores. We've all had sores. We know what that is. So he got dogs licking his sores. And those were his friends, maybe the only friends he had. Now, things are getting ready to change. So, feel free now. This is an open class, y'all. You know, let's talk. Whatever you want to say. So it was that the beggar died. Now notice, what kind of funeral do you think he had on this earth? You're right. I was thinking of the beggar. So it was the beggar died. Okay, I'm sorry. I was thinking about the rich man. Let's get that in a second. And was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and he's buried. But what do you think the rich man had a big pomp and ceremony? Big time. I'm sure he did. We've all seen them. We've all been to those. You and I were just talking about those. It was no doubt a big, grandiose pomp and ceremony kind of a thing. How did God describe it? Rich man died and he buried the man.
No angels.
A good point. Real good point. Now notice, and the beggar died and was carried by, that's one of your little fill-in things, carried by angels, where? Abraham's bosom. We'll talk about Hades in a little bit. Now here again, God's not going to say things he doesn't mean here, even in a parable. You know what I think happens when faithful Christians die? In fact, there's not even any doubt in my mind. I'm 100% confident in this. Angels come to where you are, and they carry you to paradise. You can go back in the Old Testament. I should have written it down. I've got it written down on my desk at home. A couple of things where angels are given charge over God's elect. You go over to the book of Revelation. I know symbolic. Thank you. Symbolic. But he says at the end, that he will send his angels to the four corners of the earth and collect the faithful. Angels are involved. We can't see them. There's tens and thousands of these beings. And they carry out God's will and his plans. They do. So the angels came when he died, and I look forward to that day. When the angels come and they carry you away, what a flight that's going to be, to Abraham's bosom. We'll talk about that Hadean realm in a second. But the rich man died and he was buried. That's it. That's all it said about it. This contrast, this major, major contrast. Any questions so far on that till now when we get to the Hades portion? And being in torment in Hades, lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Now, in the, and we don't get all this laying in Abraham's bosom. We don't talk like that. Here in those days, that you would recline. Like if I was reclining on my, and they did that. You see pictures of that on my left hand. The person at my left might be reclining on his right hand. It was kind of an intimate kind of a setting. There was nothing immoral about the thing. That's just people were like that in the Middle East. I'm getting ready to find out here soon. So when he says that he was in Abraham's bosom, what's the picture? That's what we got to see, the big picture. This beggar that had nothing and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom into a place that's called paradise. What kind of place do you think that would be? He's not begging for food anymore. Very comfortable place. He's not hurting anymore. Dogs aren't there licking his sores, that's for sure. Now, what about the rich man? It says, being in torments in Hades. And he says, in a little bit, send Lazarus to put a drop of water, we'll talk about it in a minute, on my tongue because I am tormented in this flame. Flame. Now, wait a minute here. I thought hell, you know, after the last trumpet is sound, after judgment, or that the righteous went to heaven and the unrighteous went to hell, and where they're going to be tormented with flame day and night. Well, that's true. That's true. But it's going to happen. It's going to die too. In this intermediate state of the dead, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So when we die here, when we leave this earth and we die unfaithful, we're going to get to know the rich man fairly well. That's not a good thing. We don't want that. And it's going to be painful. Now, notice what he says. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus. He's still in charge here. See that? He thinks he is. Send Lazarus. Boy, Abraham, send Lazarus on down here with some water here. You know, he was a beggar. He recognized him some way. And he says that he can dip the tip of his finger in water. Now, notice he didn't ask for a gallon of water. You know, I'm kind of working out, doing some weightlifting here. I need to be hydrated. I need lots of water. What does that one little drop indicate his state? Terrible state. It's so intense, so hot, so flames all around. He's tormented, and he says, if I could just have a drop of water on the tip of my tongue. I think the greatness of the distress, the smallness of the favor ask indicates the greatness of the distress. So that's where the man is.
Just like Lazarus was begging.
Yeah.
Laying there hoping for crumbs. He's doing the same thing.
That's right.
For just a drop.
That's a good point.
Uh-huh. Also, here is that we know that there's not going to be no change. This is, the rich man is trying to make a change, and he can't. And it's just like at the final judgment day. Actually, where you're at now is what there will be at judgment day.
After death comes the judgment. There's no changing. Now, there are religions that you know, you pay so much money. Isn't that interesting? That you pay so much money, like God is impressed with that, that you pay so much money after so long in, what do they call it? Purgatory, that you eventually can work your way toward the front door where the air conditioning is. No. No. No, it doesn't work that way. After death comes the judgment. That's all we've got. Just got a few short years on this earth. Some of us a lot shorter than others, it appears, with our age. You know, it's like Jack. But, no. Jack will outlive me. He's in good shape. But anyway, we're like Orion said yesterday, we don't have to be old. I don't think that's a revelation to people. He had a great lesson on, time and chance happens to all. If you're at the wrong place at the wrong time, you could die at any age. At any age. It's scary, but that's just the way it is. But, and then Ryan's point was, so we live 60, 70, 80, even 90 years. In the overall scheme of things, how much is that? Nothing. It's really not. It's not much. A drop in the bucket, it's nothing. I want to go back. I know there's one other thing here I want to tell you about. I'm talking about an angel. You remember when Ahab, God had already said, you're a dead man. And he said, we get a glimpse behind at his throne, almost like he pulled the curtain back just a little bit and let us look. And he said, I see the first or second Kings. He said, spirits on his right hand and spirits on his left hand. And he's asking the question. The spirits probably were angels, but wouldn't debate that. And said, how can we get Ahab to go out to battle so we can kill him there? Remember that? And the Bible says, one said this and one said that. So there's a little conversation going on there. And then one of the angels, I think, stepped in front of his throne. He wasn't on his side anymore. Stepped in front of the throne and said, I have a plan. I'm paraphrasing just a little bit, but not too much. I will send a lying spirit that he'll believe a lie, and he'll go up to battle, and that's what happened, and we'll kill him there. And then God said, first of all, when he said, I have this plan, and I love this conversation, God says, in what way are you going to do this? Love that. And then he says, I'm going to do this and that. And he says, go and make it happen. That's angels. He makes things happen today via his messengers. We don't know how, but I am persuaded he makes things happen today.
That's in 1 Kings 22.
1 Kings 22. I love that story there. I just love it. It's just like God in his mercy said, I'm going to give you just a little shot here so you can look behind the curtains. But I'm going to push them back. But the activity around his throne, there's so much going on there, even today. I firmly believe that. All right, thank you. But Abraham said, son, now here's we talked about this in our class a little bit yesterday. He said, son, remember. Now, flame, torment, wanting a drop of water, all that's terrible. But I think, and this certainly implies that one of the ways of being tormented in hell is going to be remembering. Oh, that would be horrible. Remember the opportunities that you had to come forward and be baptized, or the opportunities you had to go and do and see and do all these wonderful things. Remember all that? We're going to have an opportunity if we're in hell. I pray that, of course, none of us are there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But we're going to be able to remember that in your lifetime. That's punishment. So when we go there, we're not like Rover dead all over. We're aware. George Washington is as aware today as he was when he was president, as far as aware of wherever he is. And he's able to remember. And we're going to be able to remember. That's a big punishment for the rich man. What do you think he would remember? Boy, I wish I'd given Lazarus some food, among other things.
I kind of wonder if one of the big things that we'll be judged on is how we treat people.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, that's like a biggest thing to
yes.
me is.
No, that's a great. It's a simple point, but it's a very good point. Yes, it's how we treat people. It's how we treat people. Remember when Jesus in some of his parables he talked about fig trees and all of these things, and what did he say? By your fruits, they will know you.
Well, what do you think fruits mean? We've got this parable. We particularly in the desert, orange trees and all kinds of trees. If a tree has fruit, are you happy with that tree, or are you about ready to cut it down? Pretty happy with it. It's bearing fruit. And then he's not concerned about fruit trees, but then he says, you bear fruit. You bear fruit. When people are in the hospital, you go visit them. When people need something, you're there for them. And on and on and on. We are to bear fruit. Yes, right.
Over in Matthew 25, you know, when he's talking about the judgment there, mm-hmm. obviously we're going to be, Alan made this point in a lesson, so I'll steal it from you, that obviously we're going to be judged on a lot of other things,
yes.
but the only thing he talks about there that we'll be judged on is actually how we treat people. And so it's so important, and it's something that we should highlight so much.
So much.
And that's why the second greatest commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself, because if we're not doing that, you know, John talks about how meaningless it is for us to say that we love God if we can't love our neighbor too.
That's right. Good point. Very good point. John says that how can you say that you love God, who you have not seen, and hate your brother, who you have seen? It's a rhetorical question. Impossible. Right.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting the way you're keying in on the word remember here. It's a great point. I've never heard that made. I heard a quote a while back that makes me think of. It said that's really struck. I probably heard it 20 years ago or 15 years ago, and it stuck with me. It's that there are two pains in life, discipline and regret. And discipline is measured in ounces, and regret is measured in tons.
Wow. That's pretty heavy right there. That's the regret that he has even now. And we'll get to his five brothers in a second. But the old idea that you heard, I know we all have, misery loves company. You heard that one? How does that work here? No. I've got five brothers back there. Misery loves company? Well, if that's true, I hope those five guys come here so we can kind of hang out. No. That's not true, Alan.
Just going back to our lives being in comparison, you know, as a span of time in comparison to eternity and how little that is, and remembering one of the problems that, you know, I've had in my Christian life is remembering certain sins and, you know, regretting things that I've done. But if you were Lazarus, are you thinking about your poor days as a beggar next to Abraham? You're not thinking about those things. And so I think the opposite, you know, people in hell will remember, but people in heaven, I don't think that we're going to be looking back and being like, man, what I did when I was 25, we're just going to be so carried away with the joys of heaven that the bad things we won't remember. So there's two sides to that coin.
Yeah, no, that is a very good point, and is right. I've never heard that side of it. I've always kind of viewed the negative side. That's a good point. Remember, he said he's very clear in several places, but in the book of Revelation he says it several times, 21, 22 in there, that there'll be no more sorrow, no more pain. Well, he says those were former things. They vanished away. Now, the question always comes is, well, what if I make it and my wife or my grandmother didn't make it? Well, I don't know how God's going to do it. Well, I don't. When we were kids, we had this little thing where you could write. It was like an Etch-a-Sketch, only it was even more primitive than that. You'd write something on it, and then you'd pull this little, it'd go whoosh. And what was written there before was gone. Like it was magic. Whoosh. I don't know how he's going to do that, but I think he will. Because he said, there's no more sorrow, pain, crying, funerals, none of that.
Heaven's not going to be littered with landscape of funeral of graveyards and all of that. Those things were former. They gone. And we've all, and I'll tell you, Alan, and I could be the leader of that parade as in my late teens and through early 20s. Things that God forgave me a long time ago for that I have a tough time even yet sometimes thinking about that they still plague you. But those will be gone when we get there. Just like Lazarus didn't think about his bath time. That's a really good point on the other side of that coin, which I never thought of. Paul.
Sometimes I've heard people say that you're not going to have that pain in heaven, mm-hmm. like if your wife or your husband doesn't make it, because you're not going to know them. But this kind of disproves that. You know, the rich man knew who Lazarus was, called him by name.
Well, they're not in heaven yet.
No.
It's that intermediate state of the dead. I mean, there is going to be, and some people have said, and that's okay. This is just an open class. We're all good. That, in effect, we are judged when we die. That's true. We're going to draw that little circle here in a minute of Hades. We are judged, in a sense. We're just waiting the sentence. That Jodi Arias, she's been judged guilty. She's not been sentenced yet. When we die, we are judged. And we go to one of those two compartments, and they're huge, waiting sentencing. So it's not going to be a surprise, I don't think, on Judgment Day when Hades is emptied out. And you know where you're headed. You've known that for a long time. Now, here again, some of this, the ice gets a little thinner out here with some of this. I don't claim to be understanding all this stuff 100%, but he does give us a nice glimpse into what it's going to be like on when we die. Joan.
I'm not sure if I heard you follow through with your point when you first started about the rich man and Lazarus. That the rich man was not a thief or a murderer or anything, but yet look where he ended up. And it does make you wonder if it is because of the way he treated people like Lazarus.
No, that's exactly where I was headed, Joan, and thank you. Sometimes we think, and my dad used to say this for a long, long time, and I've heard you, we've all heard him, you know, I'm not a bad man. I don't rob, I don't steal, I don't drink, I don't beat the dog, I don't beat my wife, I don't whatever. And all that's fine, you shouldn't be doing those things. But to your point a little bit earlier, what did you do that was good? Remember when he says on that day, he says, the ones on the right, come into the house prepared for you, you blessed, because you saw me hungry, you fed me. You saw me naked, and you clothed me. You saw me, I needed water, and you gave me water. I was sick, and you visited me. And the people are going, Lord, I never saw you like that. Ah, what did he say? What would Jesus reply? In that you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And lesson for us, better get busy doing things for some people. That's how we're going to be judged.
Two, when you look down later as he's begging to go back to his five brothers, and he says, if I'm able to come back and speak to them, they'll repent. Meaning that he knows exactly what their problem is.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what their issues are, what they're struggling with. And so he knows that if he can, he thinks that if he goes back and he can actually talk to them,
right.
that whatever it is that they're doing, living in sin, is probably very similar to what he was doing. So if it wasn't just his treatment of the poor, it's some sin that he knows about, and he's trying to go and talk to his brother
good
about
point.
Too.
So. Real good point, Alan. Good point.
I just wanted to key in on what you had quoted, you know, the least of these, my brethren, meaning
the people who you think are on the bottom of the totem pole. And I want to emphasize, it is who we think is the least of these, because where was Lazarus now? He was by Abraham's side. You know, he was that close to Abraham. Well, he was a beggar. And yeah. It just goes to show you that in the spiritual realm of things, there is no hierarchy. You know, you've got a beggar right yeah. next to Abraham. There's no hierarchy in the Lord's church. There is no least of these in the spiritual realm. It's only in the physical realm. Yeah. But before we start labeling people least of these, we need to understand some of these people might be right next to, you know, Abraham and the Lord Jesus.
No, that's a great point. And Jesus said, now the context, you know, but I don't think the principle's violated. And I have to go back and look at the context, but he said, there will be some that are last that'll be first. And there'll be some that are deemed, you know, we think are first, that's going to finish last. But you're right. And I think that ties into the parable. And I love this one too. Where, and some of you guys may have it already, where the vineyard, the workers in the vineyard, went to work for the Lord, and the Lord hired him, and they agreed on a salary, day's wage, and he started early in the morning. And then you had the folks that got in at 10, 11 o'clock, and they got, so to speak, and they got the same pay. Well, from our perspective, I'm not so sure I wouldn't have said the same thing. That's not right. That's not fair from a earthly perspective. It's a whole different deal over there, as you said. A whole different deal. Good point.
Sometimes you get a picture of why these parables are actually being spoken when you kind of back up and look at the audience who he's speaking to, because back in verse 14 of Luke 16, he says, "Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him." And then he goes on, and that's sort of the introduction to when he really starts getting into this parable.
Yeah.
And so he's really directly speaking to people who love money, and not only people who love money, but Pharisees who love money.
Great point. What did the rich man in Luke 12 do? Rich farmer. I mean, things are rolling. Man, it's awesome. Just look what I'm doing. I got so much. I'm going to tear down this little sorry barn, and I'm going to build me a bigger barn, because look what I have done. What did the Lord say to that? You fool. He didn't put Lord, he didn't put the Lord first. He said, tonight your soul is required of you. Then whose things are these going to be? And it's with our lives. Whether we leave a little or we leave a lot. Guess how much we're leaving? Be all of it. I've mentioned it in my presentation on Africa, but my good friend Theophilus over there, I mean, you saw how they live. They got nothing. But they are strong here. And the reason Theophilus told me, he said, "Mitchie, I'm going to tell you something. Our lives are never going to improve here. We know that. We trust the Lord to give us enough to eke by. But our lives are never going to improve. The country's in too bad a shape. It's just a terrible country. We know it's not going to improve, but we're hanging on to this. The least of these, our brethren, if you looked at them, where they, how they live, you'd say, man, that's somebody that'd be like me. No. The least of these, my brethren. They're not going to be the least over there on the other side. Real important point. But sometimes we get all hung up. Boy, I don't know if my IRA is going to have enough. You know, you and I were just talking about some of that. In the final analysis, guess what, in 50 years, well, some of you younger guys, even you're going to be 80 then, 85. Most of us are going to be long. It's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. It's really not. It's all about this. These are excellent points. I'm so glad you're bringing them up. All right. Anything else? Feel free.
The rich man wanted his brother to come back, but we have Christ that has come to earth, lived and died,
and went back to heaven. He came down here to teach us.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, he says, now, besides all this, what I've just told you here, we got a problem. Or you got a problem. We don't have a problem on this side. Oh, by the way, Abraham. Well, I meant to make that point, and I'll get to that. These were Jews. Now, who was their hero, even today, with Jews? Who's their big hero? Abraham. Everybody knew Abraham. Well, guess where Lazarus is? In Abraham, next to him. And the rich man, guess where? He knew Abraham. He called him. Father Abraham. How do you know that? I don't know about all that. But so these were Jews. So you know it was eating him up inside. There's Abraham. I thought I had it right. I didn't. And he said, now, besides all this, well, everything I've just said, between us and you, there's a great gulf that's fixed. And we know what fixed means. Is it going to change? No. It's not going to change. When we die here, we all go to Hades. We do. But Hades... And this is where I have my little easel. I draw a little circle right now. So just visualize that. You got a circle, and you've got these two, I'm going to call them parallel lines, down here, right down through the middle of this circle, and I would write gulf, G-U-L-F. It's just this great chasm, if you will. And it's fixed. It doesn't move. On one side of that is paradise. On the other side of that is hate, is torment. But it's still called Hades. And the reason we know that, not only this, but Jesus said when he was on the cross and there were two thieves, and they both said, we deserve to be here. You don't. One of them did anyway. And he looked over at Jesus and he said, remember me when you come in your kingdom. What was Jesus' reply? Today, you'll be with me in paradise. So when Jesus died, where did he go? He went to Hades, on the paradise side. Even the Lord. They wasn't there long. 3 days. And then he was resurrected. So that's the same place. Now, where is it? I don't know that. The Bible keeps talking about the middle of the earth. And remember when he... Those 20-something thousand people, the earth's opened up and they swallowed them. I don't know. Could be in the center of the earth. I don't know that. It doesn't matter, really. But there's this place called Hades. Right down the center, there's this. It's big enough that you can't cross, because I'm sure I'd be trying to swim across that thing or get across it some way. I'd be trying to get across that some way. He says it's impossible. It's fixed. And he says, those that want to come from there to here cannot. And those that want to come from here to there cannot. It's impossible. It's fixed. So that's this great realm of Hades that we all go to when we die. Hopefully on the paradise side. Now, he's not done yet. Oh, okay, go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to say, on top of what you were saying about remembering making it worse, that's like... having a window into what you could have. Yeah. Talk about how bad that could be.
He could actually see what's going on. I don't know how much of that, but he could see enough to see Lazarus and Abraham and the comfort that they were in. He could see that. I don't know how that works. But you're right, that's like double a torment. When you can see it. Like locking my keys up in the car one time. And I had this old guy at church. He was in his 80s then. He'd been long dead. And before I even thought, I had two little kids. They were about that tall. And he said, well, just reach your hand in there and get those keys. Before I even thought, I did. And of course, I hit the glass. I could see those keys. I wanted those keys. I got one little one. Michelle at the time was on, a bottle. We had to get that, ready to get in there. But it tormented me. Couldn't get those keys. It's almost like it's a window in that you can see, but you can't go. And that, to me, that would be extra torment.
So he said, can't do that. Then he said, now he's not finished yet. Then he says, therefore, he said, I beg you, Father, that you would send him to my father's house. So who's talking here? The rich man. And who's he asking to send? Lazarus. He said, send Lazarus back to my father's house. He's still barking orders. And what's the implication of that? If somebody rose from the dead and went back, boy, they'll believe then. If I could just see the miracles that Jesus did, I'd believe then. If I could see a person raised from the dead, I'd believe. No, he wouldn't, about 15 minutes. You wouldn't. It wouldn't last. It really wouldn't. And he said, and Abraham says, let me go ahead and finish that. For I have five brothers. So he remembers, as somebody said, he remembers he got five brothers back there, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. And Abraham said, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. What's he saying? Everybody has the same opportunity. You can believe it or you can reject it. But we're all going to rise or fall as individuals on how we react to this. How do most react? Jesus said that. I'm not saying it. What do most people do with this? Reject it. Reject it. Broad is the way. Narrow is the way. All of that. Most people look at this. In fact, look at you like, fool, are you crazy? That's what my neighbor tells me. Got more money than the rich man. Probably. And he said, Johnson, you've bought into all this stuff, man. Oh, no, he really gets me down the road. Of course, I'm not going to let him take that too long. Imagine that. I go back at him, and I've talked to him about the rich man of Lazarus. I have. You don't believe those fairy tales, do you? I sure do, brother. I sure do.
Fairy tales.
I love that.
They're not fairy tales, first of all.
Huh?
They're not fairy tales.
No, they're not. Oh, no, I know that. Yeah.
But it's interesting that with this, that didn't this rich man live when Jesus was alive? That he would have seen him, or all the people that didn't want Jesus when he was really on the earth?
Good point.
I mean, how horrible would that be?
It's a good point. That's a real good point. What did most people do with the Lord? Accept him or reject him? Rejected him. What's my problem? Really, when you think about it. The Lord, and what did he do? Performed all those miracles, raised the dead. One of them just happened to be named Lazarus. And others, Jairus' daughter, all of that. And there were some that believed, relatively speaking. But most people didn't. And that was the Lord himself. So a little sorry person like me, with my little limited abilities, what can I expect if somebody says, like my neighbor, you buying into all that stuff? Yeah, I am. You know, you just let it run off your back and just keep on going.
One of the hardest things has to be comforting somebody who has lost a loved one when you know that they're not saved.
Yes.
And until a few years ago when I was studying this very passage, I had no idea what to say to somebody. And in fact, I was, you know, I've just been in this situation, losing my grandma on my mom's side. Never interested in spiritual things, never interested in hearing the gospel. But those people who are now gone, they want us to be saved. My grandma wants me to do what's right now, even though she wasn't interested on earth. So I that's the only comforting thing that I can say to somebody who thinks about somebody that's lost. You know they're gone. You know they're lost, but it is kind of comforting this, that they don't want us to be there. And they're rooting for us now.
Yeah. That's a very good point. Never thought of that either. That's a good point. That while they rejected him on the earth, they're where this guy is now. And what are they thinking about? Alan? I hope Alan didn't come to this place. We've all got people like that. I do. If they could come back, that's what they'd say. Because they're saying it now. We got a little glimpse of it. That's a good point. That's a good point. Relatively speaking, there's just going to be very few. Now, there'd probably be millions in heaven. But you put in the numerator 1 million, 2 million over the 17 billion that have lived, they estimate, since time began. And the other billions that are going to be born, call it 20 billion, whatever, doesn't matter. Two million over 20 billion. What kind of percentage have you got there? Point zero zero zero. I mean, so relatively speaking, not many are going to make it because they can't accept this. They didn't accept it when Jesus was here. And when he said, the servant's not above the master. If they rejected you, and they're upset if they rejected me, and they're upset with me, crucified me, don't act like you're going to skate through this thing. You're not. You're not. The servant's not above his master. So we shouldn't act like it's some big surprise. And I did for a long time. As I've gotten older, I'm taking the word shock has come out of my vocabulary. I don't know what that means anymore.
We read this and like we have 20/20 vision where we can look back and see what Jesus is really saying. But at the moment when he's actually saying this, he hasn't been crucified yet. He hasn't been raised from the dead yet. And so this is a very strange way of him almost prophesying of himself.
Yeah.
And almost, in a sense, putting himself in that poor man Lazarus's shoes, to where he was so lowly on this earth and he was so poor on this earth. Jesus didn't even have a place to lay his head except for on a rock, and he didn't have a home to call his own, and all these things that we kind of take for granted ourselves. But he's basically saying that when he came back from the dead, it's not a surprise that people aren't going to accept that somebody even raised is someone they should listen to, because they just, when you don't esteem someone highly on this earth, it doesn't really matter if they come back from the dead. You're probably not going to listen to them. And we can see evidence of that today. We can see how many people can see and understand and we can talk to him until we're blue in the face about how Jesus came back from the dead and was raised again and all these things, and still that doesn't change a lot of people's hearts today.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And I think it's 1 Thessalonians 2. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. It's either 2 Thessalonians. No, 1 Thessalonians. I had it right. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11 says this. And for this reason, now I won't go back too far because our time is probably going to run out, but he says, for this reason, he says, and go up a verse, he says, because they didn't love the truth. And he says, for this reason, because you did not love the truth, God will send them a strong delusion that they will believe a lie and be lost. There's going to be a lot of lost people because they did not have a love for the truth. John. That's going to be one of the separators, I think. They did not love the truth. They want some of this. I like that page. I don't like that one. You don't love the truth. And he'll let us believe that and be lost. Because we don't love it. You got to love the truth. John.
I really appreciate that point that you're making. Because in this context with Lazarus, the rich man was constantly saying something that was not true, that Abraham had to correct him on. And so he kept saying, okay, have Lazarus do that, or have Lazarus do this. And Abraham was saying, no, wait a minute, you're not thinking the right way about this. You don't understand. What you're saying is exactly the case. We have to believe and understand the truth about these things.
Excellent point.
It's so true. There are people who have just enough religion to do what they want to do, to salve their conscience, and think that that's going to be enough. And as we all know, it takes a life of dedication. I mean, it just does. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's a good life. I told some people not long ago, I said, you know, I'll never be killed in a bar fight. Now, in my 20s, I would have. But I'll never be killed in a bar fight. You know why? I don't go to bars. And we don't, none of us do. Not going to be, get a DUI? Why not? Could I have gotten DUIs in my life? Yes. Because I don't drink that stuff. So it's a good life, even on this earth. The drama in a lot of people's households, it's so dramatic. They don't have this. If you live in a household, and not everybody does, my dad was not a Christian, so I got some of that as well. But when you grow up in it was never a debate whether we're going to church tonight. I never had that debate. I don't feel, get in the car for it, wear you out. Going to church? You kidding? We gone. To say on Duck Dynasty. We gone. So people who have this constant little bit of religion back and forth, always in a turmoil, they don't come on Sunday night, they do that. Miserable people. They're not happy in the church building. So to speak, I'm using it's a metaphor. They're not happy in church, and they're not happy on the job. Why? Those folks at church too far to the right. Those folks at work, man, they into everything. I don't like them either. That's misery. Don't do that. Just get after it and go on. Really. Right? Brian, we've all been there. Sure have. Sure have. I'm sounding a little preachy now, sorry. This is a class. I don't mean to get too preachy.
I think it's really interesting, though, because who, of these two characters, who are we in the physical sense the most like? I mean, you know, you kind of just said it yourself. We get in our car, our purple car.
Yeah. Leather.
With leather.
Heated seats.
Exactly. You know, we've got a pretty nice situation, and so I think sometimes it's easy for us to look around and say, you know, doing God's will is easy. But, you know, you ask Lazarus, who was eating crumbs off of someone's table and full of sores and having the dogs lick him, you know, was his life easy? Well, probably not the way we would want to call it easy. But the fact is, serving the Lord with the right perspective and with a focus on godliness, not saying that we have to give up everything that we have, not saying that we have to lay down everything that we have for the poor. Obviously, though, we have a greater responsibility, and I think that's why Jesus spends so many opportunities talking about the dangers of someone who's rich. Yeah. And so, you know, we really do have to take a lot of consideration here and be very cautious about how we are in this life, because we need to be very careful that we're not this rich man, and that we're not putting ourselves in his position, that we're actually humbling ourselves, lowering ourselves, and not being selfish and filled, I guess, with worldliness is really the issue. So
it's that's a sobering point, and it is, and I worry about those kinds of things. But to whom much is given, much is required. Jesus said that. Means that the more you have of this world's goods, the more the Lord expects us, is what Brian was saying, the more he expects us to use what we have for good purposes.
Well, and that's actually
hard to do sometimes.
With Abraham, I mean, Abraham, who's there in this story.
Rich man.
He was super rich, and probably one of the most rich people around, because God blessed him so much. So it's not to say that, you know, that being rich with this world's goods is a bad thing, but you know, really, really have to be super careful how much we value those things or how much we how much emphasis or priority, I guess, we place on those things, and recognize that all of these good things are coming from the Lord, and they're all His anyway. So it's kind of that stewardship thought of what are you going to do with it, the stuff He gave you.
To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it's what? Sin. That one bothers me. That's a tough one. Have you ever thought, from a practical side, I just watched 2 hours of TV. 4 straight Duck Dynasties. I could have been... Yeah. Have to be careful with that tube. It used to be a tube. Now it's plasma or whatever. No, we have to be careful with that stuff. And boy, I'm talking to Mitch here now. No, it's kind of a scary proposition that we do. Do good to all men, especially to those of the household of faith. Galatians 1:27. And James 1:27 and Galatians 6, verse 10. We are expected as individuals to do good to everybody. Now, especially to Christians. As individuals, we are. He could work just like me. Well, he probably could. But that don't negate his position.
Well, that's, you know, that's exactly what Lazarus is described as here in verse 20. Not just a poor man, not just somebody who was, you know, caring for his own poorness. He was a beggar. I mean, so he was actually asking for other people's money and support and help. So that's, I think that's really instructive for us when we look around and see the poor of our, you know, of our life. And, you know, obviously he was sincere in that need. So
yes. And then you try to balance that with, if a man doesn't work, Paul said, he doesn't eat. It's tough. No, you don't. You don't. Was Lazarus... No, I know you're right. Was Lazarus... And I'm not. I'm just bringing it up. But was Lazarus always a beggar? We don't know that. It doesn't indicate that. He might have fallen on hard times. He might have been a businessman. Who knows what Lazarus was? I don't know if he was a beggar his whole life. I kind of doubt it, frankly. But he'd fallen on hard times. Maybe his health, you know, all these things. Things happen, don't they? Yeah. No, all good points. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but oh, we got that one. But he said to him, no, I didn't. Verse 30, I'm sorry. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. Of course, this is Jesus talking, but Abraham talking. But he said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, the one come back from the dead. Now, for us, all we've got is this. It's complete. It's final. It's 2 Timothy 3 and verse 16, 17 says, it's everything that we need for all good works. There's no work, good works that we can't read here. It's all right here. That's our pattern. So if he were talking to us today, he would say, not Moses and the prophets, he would say, you've got my final will and testament right here, the New Testament. That's it. That's all you get. That's all you're going to get. That's all you're going to get. You see it on TV, another testament, like our friends next door here, of Jesus Christ. No, he didn't promise that. So that's Luke 16. The parable of Luke 16 with some preaching. Sorry about that. Any other comments on that? Questions or comments? It's a disturbing, but yet it's comforting. Very comforting as you head toward that sunset. Very comforting. Okay, awesome. Anybody have anything else? Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming.